Welcome to Entrepreneurship with Christo. Today, I meet with Gaynor Lawton. Gaynor is a consultant who helps sole traders and small businesses, particularly those who are key person type operations, helping those businesses with their marketing. Gaynor has an interesting way that she approaches her work. She does bring a type of psychological assistance so people can understand their demons and the things that are preventing them from being successful. She's now embarking on an audacious endeavor to help teenagers through a program called Teen Boss in identifying the skills that they need to progress their business ideas, and in some cases, I guess, identify why they shouldn't be doing entrepreneurship. Gaynor is an interesting person. She's a passionate person, and she certainly lives her life her own way. Please enjoy my conversation today with Gaynor Lawton. Gaynor, that's why we get paid the big bucks as entrepreneurs, to take these risks and go where no man or woman has gone, well, whatever you identify as.
And my story, it has to be repeated, is not half of what that gentleman, that first story.
No, that's exactly right. So look, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for agreeing to tell your story. I've got a bunch of questions I want to ask, but I thought, you know, we had a wonderful conversation last time, and I think what you're doing is inspirational, and we'll get to the Teen Boss stuff in a minute. But yeah. I just wanted to kick off with maybe just giving you an opportunity to introduce yourself and just tell us, you have this strange accent, so I presume you're from somewhere else, and maybe just tell us who Gaynor Lawton is and why do you find yourself in the land of Oz?
Firstly, hello and thank you, Peter, for inviting me onto your podcast. Yes, I do have a strange accent. If I have wine, it changes again.
You're not on your Pat Malone there, mate.
So I'm from the UK, from the Wirral Peninsula, which is between Liverpool and North Wales. And yes, if I have a glass of wine, I can do a good Scouse accent.
Okay, nice.
How do I find myself in Oz? My elder sister actually came here many years ago, and I was working in Manchester. I was working in PR, and I took a contract, a 6-month maternity leave contract, for a friend actually. And when I finished that contract, I thought, I think I'll go and see my sister. And as soon as I landed on the tarmac in Perth, I knew with every cell in my body that I was meant to live here.
Oh, wow.
There was no justifying it. There was no reason. Nothing had happened other than this huge feeling that came over me. I was here for 3 months on a 3-month holiday visa. And in that time, in my opinion, serendipitously, I bumped into somebody who introduced me to somebody else who offered me a job, who ended up sponsoring me. So I ended up that first year staying. Actually, I got a 2-year sponsorship with them. It just was right. It was the right thing to do. It all felt as though this is where I belong. In that first year, just at the end of that first year, my father, who wasn't very well back in the UK, I got a call from him to say that it had been he'd been diagnosed with terminal cancer, late stages. And so I, without hesitation, went back to the UK. My sponsor got annoyed at this and cancelled the sponsorship.
Oh.
So it took me another...
What a compassionate individual.
Oh, absolutely. It took me another, I think, 5 or 6 years to come here permanently. I did a few trips in between.
Okay.
But yes, it was just meant to be, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And you were on your own? You weren't, didn't have a family or anything? Yep.
No, my elder sister, as I said, was here over in Perth, but I came straight to Melbourne and spent a lot of that first year, actually, because I wasn't sponsored straight away. So I just kept extending my visa and did a lot of traveling around, met a great group of friends, some of who are still, I'm still friends with now. And that was back in 94.
Right.
And I ended up getting here in permanently in 2001.
Right, right.
And haven't looked back.
Right. Okay. So why Melbourne?
To be perfectly honest, I had been to Sydney and it reminded me too much of London. So back in the UK, I lived in London for a good 10 years. The latter part of before me coming over here, I had settled in Manchester. And as much as Manchester is a city compared to London, any city compared to London in the UK or in the, you know, in Britain, is not really a city.
Right.
It's a smaller city. And Melbourne had a Manchester feel to me. It's nothing like Manchester, but in my opinion, Sydney was too much like London, which I didn't want to do. And I also had a friend of a friend here, who I actually ended up marrying, which was another story for a different podcast altogether.
Why I married the wrong people, the podcast?
No, not the wrong person. I married the person I was meant to marry. Okay. I had the daughter I was meant to have, and I divorced the man that I married. I was meant to divorce him.
Oh, you divorced the man you were meant to divorce. Okay, fair enough. I think a lot of us are in touch with that emotion.
So not only was it a personal choice, but also that happened and he lived here. He lived in Melbourne as well. And in that first year, as I said, I did go to Sydney. I did go to Ayers Rock. I did go to Queensland for a while. I'd been in Perth with my sister. I think I have passed through Adelaide. I don't think I've stayed in Adelaide. And yes, I just kept getting drawn back to Melbourne. And I think because it was the first place that I came to, I had a feeling of a bit of a familiarity with it.
Okay. It sounds like you're an intrepid character. You've left the comfort and familiarity of your home country, come on an exciting adventure, which hasn't stopped. And is that, so where did this entrepreneurial spirit, so you've done a few things and I want to talk about that, but where did the entrepreneurial spirit come from? Was it infected by your parents? Was it just something about you, do you think?
I think I've never been asked that before, actually. I think it came from knowing what I didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I got a job in a bank. I left school early and Mum said the only way you can leave school is if you get a job. And I went and got a job in Barclays Bank, which is a big bank in the UK. And it wasn't because I wanted to work in banking. It was because I wanted to get out of school.
Right.
And the reason I didn't enjoy school was because probably I wasn't fantastic at a lot of things unless I loved them. And the things that I loved didn't really exist in school or were just one term of 1 year. And so consequently, I got out of there and thought, just let me out into the world and I'll do what I want to do. But to get out, I had to get this job. So as much as it was probably one of the most, I learned a lot. I definitely learned a lot, but it was quite a mundane job. But I did move to London with it. So I was up in the Northwest and I worked there for a while and then I got transferred to London. And that was really good. Again, everything that I've done has served its purpose.
Yep. So I've just hit record on it because I use it for some of the promotional stuff. So
yeah, sure. So yes, every step that I've taken has led to obviously where I am now. But I can remember when I was still at school, one of the things I absolutely loved was sewing.
Right.
And I had a brilliant sewing teacher. And I used to make clothes for myself and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking into a nightclub once and there were two people in there who were wearing clothes that I'd made.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, wow, you know, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a little label made called Street Life. And I think what happened, which kind of brings me, not right now, but to Teen Boss, was I was probably 15 or 16 then. And nobody else in my family took that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh, maybe this isn't a job. Maybe I can't do this.
What's a job?
You know, I'd have to go to uni and study fashion design or something right. like that. And I wanted to get out of, to me, that institutionalized environment.
So Gaynor, let me tell you, you're speaking to the son of a seamstress. I grew up in the rag trade. I grew up sleeping in the bundles. My mum had a couple of production businesses, and she was the entrepreneur in the family. So, yeah, you're speaking my song here. You're speaking my language. So I definitely get it. So it's interesting. You say, you know, what's a job? I bump into this. At the risk of making this about myself, and I don't mean to, but I bump into this where people in my life will say, because I don't have a job, can I do this? So including from my parents, you know, friends and family, because I don't have a job. No, but I'm busy, right? I don't have a job that somebody else owns the company, right?
Yes.
You know, so it's my business and my startup and my podcast, and so I'm busy, and I hesitate to say that it's a type of discrimination where, because I can go down the road and pick up my son will do it. He'll say, Dad, you can come and get me. Dude, it's 10:30 in the morning. I mean, you know, I've got meetings. Please.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that, yes, I can stop and I can shoot down and I can grab him.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll probably edit that out. So you're in Melbourne. You've had a little bit of a spark of entrepreneurship in your life, and I guess that my impression is that you have this adventurous spirit, and you're also a creative person.
Mm-hmm.
So your first business, my read of your bio, was. Mm. My impression was, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was like a mentoring business. Is that?
Well, no, what happened was I didn't really start my own business until I came to Australia.
Right.
So I worked in marketing and PR in the UK, both down in London and then up in Manchester, and also event management and corporate fundraising, which sounds like I chopped and changed a lot. It wasn't so much that as within a PR agency, you get access to lots of things. So I did event management under the PR umbrella. And I loved all of that. I met great people. I saw jobs I didn't realize existed. My family certainly didn't know they existed, which was why, you know, going into the bank was probably the one direction that they thought was great for me.
Familiarity.
Yes. And when I came to Australia initially, obviously I couldn't work at first, and then when I was sponsored, I was actually sponsored by a guy who owned an event management company,
right?
And so I continued to do similar things, but for myself. I hadn't set myself up as anything. I was just working under my own name. So I worked with him and until I didn't. Then I went and worked at Kids Helpline,
mm-hmm.
which I used to work at Childline in the UK. Kids Helpline is based on the formula of Childline. It's slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
I worked as a fundraiser for them for a little while.
This is here in Melbourne?
Here, yes. And I just sort of was muddling my way through in a way, I wanted to stay independent. But I couldn't quite work out what I was going to do. And so in the end, I started a business called Marketing Naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason was that I had got a lot of marketing and PR under my belt.
Yep.
But I also had an interest in natural health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across quite a lot of therapists and people just in the circle that I seemed to have drawn or was drawn to. And what I realized about those guys, their work was amazing. Now, we could be talking a massage therapist, a naturopath, mm-hmm. a reflexologist, any type of natural health and wellness, they didn't have very much confidence in themselves and they weren't able to promote themselves.
Right.
Because they were the business, really. The business mm-hmm. depended on them.
Yeah, key, and so key person type operation, key man, the key man yeah. type model, yeah, or woman.
So I started to, I said to them, I went and worked. So I did colour therapy and I did Reiki as well. And I went and worked in this clinic. And I said to them, why don't I, because my background's marketing, why don't I do a workshop just for us all? It wasn't going to cost anything other than us going away and staying in this place. And let's go through some marketing, some very easy marketing that you can do. And they loved it. I loved it. I realized what I knew.
Right.
And so that's where marketing naturally was started.
Right.
So I stayed in the realm of working in the health and wellness, well, working with health and wellness practitioners, clinics and individuals. And that was, I loved that. I still do love that world. Then I personally went and did the NICE course.
So your business was a one-person operation at that stage?
Yes, it was just me.
Right. And you hadn't, I guess you stumbled into it because you didn't say, okay, look, I see there's a niche here, and I write a business plan, I'm going to get some venture capital. You didn't do any of that. Exactly. You just basically went off and did it.
Exactly. So by doing the NICE program, which I found out about, what happened there was I did put the business plan together. I did put the finance plan together and I realized the size of the market in Australia for natural health and wellness, this will work.
All right.
And so that's what I did for a long time. The year that I finished the NICE program, so NICE basically is a short course and then you have a mentor to the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, the provider that I had taken the course with, approached me and said, would I like to teach the marketing component this course? And of course, I bit their hand off because I loved the course and I love the creativity of people's ideas wanting to start businesses. So it wasn't a full-time position at all, but I was called a sessional.
Yep.
So I was still able to maintain my own clients within marketing naturally. And I was now teaching the marketing component of the NICE program.
Right.
And what I also realized in that over time, not straight away, but over time, was that it wasn't just people in natural health and wellness that were didn't have the confidence to promote themselves. It was actually a lot of sole traders, a lot of individuals whose business was them at that time, at the startup point.
Yep.
And I had a little bit of an aha moment at one point that it also was me too, because I was selling workshops and I was the person, you know, writing and running the workshops. So it was really, if somebody refused it, you sort of, or didn't enjoy it or didn't like it or whatever. It wasn't personal, but it felt personal because I'd written it and presented it and whatever.
It's all personal as far as I'm concerned because it's your business, so it's personal.
Yes. So over the period working with NICE, I was with Kangan originally, Kangan Institute, and that was in Richmond and in Essendon. I then moved to another provider and it was during that was Mission Australia, which actually has been disbanded now and renamed and changed. It was while I was with them that I actually realized this about most people who came and did this course. And they were of all ages. They were all adults. You had to be over 18.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit of a criteria for getting in.
There needs to be a better test for being an adult than over 18, I think. I know 50-year-olds are not adults yet.
Well, that has served me well for putting together Teen Boss, I'll tell you that.
Right.
So I started to, another component of the NEES program was you could teach it and then you could actually be the mentor for some of the students for the next 12 months. And so I started doing the mentoring as well. And this gave me access to a lot more insight into the way these people were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done the course, they put together a great business plan. As far as everyone was concerned, all I had to do now was execute it, which is easy to say. But when you leave the safety of the classroom and your peers who are all in the same boat and you go back to your partner or back to your parents or back to an empty house, you now have to convince yourself that you can actually execute this business plan.
Right.
And that's what, excuse me, and that's what I saw when I started mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
And I became really intrigued with this because,
I was just gonna ask, so you're intrigued with it with respect to the insight that you got about who you were? Or because, yeah. You know, the thing is we can all stand on top of the mountain, we put our hands on our hips and say, this is the way, you know, it should be. Yeah. But it is a symbiosis, I don't know what the right word is, but there seems to be aha moments when you go, look, I'm not in Kansas anymore. Like, I just don't fit in the get a job, go to work at 9, come home at 5, whatever. I'm interested in, because I do want to get to Teen Boss, but there are a couple of things that you've said along the way, particularly some of the stuff you've written, that I want to kind of get who you are and then talk why you and Teen Boss, because Teen Boss doesn't strike me as a business that you do because you had an aha moment and you think you're going to be a billionaire. It sounds like it's a labor of love, so we'll get to that. But
okay.
So what was your insight about Gaynor? Like, what did you see about yourself? And I guess how long ago was that?
I saw myself in each of these people. It didn't matter whether they were male or female, you know, 20 or 60.
Mm-hmm.
Over, as I was mentoring them and speaking to them, I was realizing, oh my gosh, we all feel the same, including me.
What's that feeling that you're talking about?
That feeling is, can I really do this?
So self-doubt.
Self-doubt.
Fear.
And
fear. Fear, yes. Fear of failing?
My personal fear used to be humiliation.
Okay. And so the opprobrium of your peers in the community that you are no good. And that's his proof. Is that?
That you could be, well, another thing that I have now got over was that I left school with no qualifications or base qualifications. Right. I didn't go on to train as being a mentor or a
not that there is one. No. Oh, they might claim to be, but
yes, no, there isn't. So it was almost like, who am I to make these suggestions to these people?
Right.
And I would silence that by saying, because you've done quite a lot, Gaynor. You've worked with a lot of different people in a lot of different environments, and you've learned a lot. And when you put your mind to it, you know how good you are. Doing things the way you do things.
Would you describe it as finding your authentic self and then having from that position rather than from a position of authority? Is that?
It's nothing to do with authority. The fear might be that there was no one to tell me what to do, as much as I actually hated that school and working for people.
Yep.
But all of a sudden it was like, there isn't anyone to tell me not only what to do next, but what to do if there's a problem.
Mm.
And there was no one there to say, oh, well done, you get a pay rise. Or, you know, that was great, that, you know, whatever we did, well done, team. There was nothing. It was me in my head. And I knew this, but I hadn't really seen it. You know, I hadn't really thought about it, but I knew it was there. So doing the mentoring brought this to the surface in me. And obviously, I was having conversations with people who were saying what I would be saying if someone was asking me what I was asking them.
So would you say you're better at giving advice than taking it?
Well, I gave it to myself. The one thing that I realized was I wanted to then do something about this low self-worth that I have had and I was seeing in a lot of these people.
So is this what you mean when you say growing the person behind the business?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So sort of unpack that a little bit for me.
So what I decided to do was I realized that self-worth comes from what we believe about ourselves, mm-hmm. or what we think about ourselves. What we think about ourselves is based on a belief. Mm-hmm. So I spent about a good year just carrying on doing what I was doing. But also what I was doing was finding out as much information about the belief system mm-hmm. as I could, whether it was self-help books, talks, webinars.
Right.
I went on all these courses, did all these things, and the same thing kept happening. People were saying, say positive affirmations mm-hmm. and out-talk your belief.
Right.
Right. So in theory, that can work. But to me, your belief is a part of your system. Mm-hmm. So I hear people say, you know, look, I want to start this business. I don't want to be rich. Mm. But I just want to, you know, be comfortable.
Freedom. You want to be free. So I don't, yes. I want, you know, if you, for most people, if you put $1 million in their bank, cash, that's what is referred to as FU money, right? So if you don't like your boss, you can say FU. If you don't like your circumstances, you can say FU. Very few of us will go and lie under a tree, right? We want to do something with our life. We want to do something meaningful to us. Yes. But, you know, I think that's what I'm hearing is that, you know, want, that internal, I guess, need for agency and sovereignty.
Well, money is the one thing that I have discovered. So in about 2016, I just revamped my whole business. I went from Marketing Naturally to Believe Australia because I wanted to talk to people more about what they believed about themselves, because that was driving what was happening to them. Right. So you could have someone who had the best business plan, the best contacts, could even have the money to invest, but they had this real insecurity mm-hmm. about not being good enough.
Right.
And so their journey to become successful was hard because their own beliefs were pulling them back. They would go forward, they'd be pulled back. So I started working with people to get them to see, just through conversation, the beliefs that they were carrying.
So self-sabotage. And you're talking about self-sabotage.
Yes, but people don't know they're even doing it.
Right.
So if you've been told, for example, don't spend your money on that. That's a waste of money, mm-hmm. right? Which your parents or your guardians may well have done when you were younger. Mm-hmm. You know, save your pocket money, wait. Don't spend it on that. That's a waste. And you grow up believing that's true. Why wouldn't you? Because it came from your parents.
Sure.
And all of a sudden you might meet, it could be just a friend, it could be a partner, and they reflect back at you that you're living in a way where you're not enjoying yourself because you think, oh, look, I won't spend it on that. That's a waste of money. But you've got a nice big savings account. Mm. For what? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you've taken on the fears of your parents. And nobody's right or wrong in this. But those fear, those beliefs come in all shapes and sizes. And sometimes it's the tiniest belief that somebody realizes they have. And as soon as they realize they've got it, they then can make a choice to change it because it's only a thought that's become embedded.
I couldn't agree more. I think once you've identified the problem, the fear, or the, you know, the issue that you've got, that's 50% of the challenge gone. You know, name the dragon. I used to love that metaphor. I tell my kids, how do you kill a dragon? Find out its name, right? You wrote something that said, armed with a strategy, freeze when it came to the confidence needed. So I guess that's what you're talking about. So they're kind of immobilized because of the fear. So they've got all the elements, all the ingredients of a business, the capital, the idea, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And would you, and I guess I have a view on this, you know, would you agree that it's all very well and good at the beginning because it's all exciting? You haven't, there is no opprobrium from anyone. It's just an idea, right? Yeah. It's when you start to execute and the horrific realization that someone may criticize your baby.
This episode is sponsored by 3P Legal. I've been a customer of Peter North as my lawyer and now 3P Legal for over a decade. Peter and his team are friendly and approachable, which takes the stress out of having to navigate the complexities of legal business matters. Whether starting a business, buying or selling a business, handling contracts or estate planning, their personalized attention and quality of work is second to none. Find Peter and his team at www.3pcorp.com.au or email pnorth@3plegal.com.au if you need commercial or personal legal services, particularly if you're a startup.
Do you have a self-managed superannuation fund that holds Bitcoin or other digital assets? Leveraging DAX unique technology, DAX Digital Attestation Report simplifies your SMSF audit compliance, divorce, or other dispute resolutions. Recognized by Australian auditors and adhering to regulatory standards, their report extends beyond audits to offer decisive evidence in disputes. Prioritizing your privacy and security, DAX simplifies digital asset management and provides peace of mind. Their advanced technology ensures a straightforward approach to complex issues from audit protection to legal dispute evidence. Enhance your digital asset management and dispute resolution with DAX innovative solutions. If you are an SMSF trustee, accountant or auditor, or have a dispute regarding digital assets like Bitcoin, contact DAX today at hello@dax.io. That's hello@dax.io or call 1300 346 495 or go to their website dax.io. Someone may see something that is a fatal flaw in your baby. And that is a very, very hard thing. I mean, go up to a young mother and tell her that her baby is ugly. I dare you. You may not live to see the end of the day. You know, and I'd say it's the same thing.
Yes, I totally agree. And so once you know what you believe, my role in this new way of me operating Believe Australia was really to have conversations with people and not always about their business.
Sure.
About all sorts of things. And I would hear that, you know, they would say something and I'd say, so, you know, they'd finish the sentence and I'd say, so what do you mean by I'll never be able to do that? And they said, I didn't say that. And I said, yes, you did. And very often our beliefs come out in humor. They come out, we don't hear them, they're so quick. Mm-hmm. A prime example is if somebody drops something, if you're with someone, you know, like they might knock their pen off the desk or they drop their phone, oh, I'm so clumsy. Mm. Or, oh God, I'm so stupid.
Right, right.
Now, those two, you hear them all the time. Once you set your mind to hearing them, you will hear it all the time. That statement is as hurtful as if another person was actually saying it to you,
right,
to your body.
Right.
It doesn't matter that you're saying it to yourself and you go, oh, I don't really mean it. Your body doesn't know that you don't really mean it.
Yeah.
So that's just someone saying, oh, I'm stupid. Well, if you want that validating, then your reticular activating system will validate that for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this cycle that we're on of if we get up in the morning and we're feeling grumpy and we're feeling, you know, like we've been woken up in the middle of the night and there's no milk for your cup of coffee or you know, the car won't start. We start saying internally, oh, it's going to be one of those days.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So you attach that to a business. I'll never be rich. You know, I'll never be as clever as my brother or my sister. There's a lot of that goes on.
Right.
Oh, I'm not really qualified to run this business, even though you don't need a qualification. There's a lot of those kind of things which are quite innocent on their own. But when they belong to a person trying to start a business or in the middle of owning a business and things aren't working, sometimes these thoughts, and i.e. beliefs, are what is causing that disruption.
Okay. So So Believe Australia is still, that's your main business? I presume that's still going.
Yeah,
okay. So, and now, this was the gate, the I guess the, so let's talk about Teen Boss. I think that's a good segue into Teen Boss, because it sounds like, and tell me if I'm missing the point here, that it's not really about, you know, getting to set up businesses. It's about them identifying at an early stage in their life, which wouldn't it be wonderful if we all could do that when we're still in our teens, that those self-limiting beliefs, and also the awareness to say no, I'm okay to go and get a job and you know, we'll go up the corporate ladder, or no, I want to, I there's another path I'd like to take, or at least for a period of my life, maybe not forever. So is that what Teen Boss is about? Let's introduce us to Teen Boss.
So when I changed marketing naturally to Believe Australia, I created program 12 session programs: Believe in Your Business, Believe in Yourself, Believe in Your Wealth. And then I did one called Believe in Your Teenage Self. Mm-hmm. And it was, I trialed this just before we went into lockdown, actually. My daughter was 14 at that time. And I trialed this with her and three of her friends.
Right.
And we met each week for 2 hours. And they had little workbooks, and we did very, very simple exercises. They could keep them to themselves or they could share. It didn't matter. But I realized straight away that that young people still felt like I had felt when I was making those clothes.
Oh, okay.
Nobody saw that was a good idea.
Right, okay. Nice tie back, Gaynor. Nice tie back. That was a beautiful tie back. I love it. That's like a comedian telling a line at the beginning, everyone has a giggle, and then near the end, they go smack.
Let's go finish.
Yeah, I like it.
So what I saw with these girls, and bearing in mind they were friends, and they were also from good families, not that that should come into it, but what I'm trying to say was we were all on an even, there were four girls from an even point, if you like, starting point. And one of the questions was that they had to, that I asked them to write down, what do you feel anxious about or what do you worry about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they could put as many things as they wanted. And they all wrote this list quietly and kept it to themselves. The following week, excuse me, we did some other things. The following week, I said to them, does anybody want to share the list that we wrote last week? And one of the girls said yes. Now, of all the girls, in my opinion, having observed them, not only in this group, but as my daughter's friends, she was probably the one who was the strongest, whatever that means, and was the most confident, I would say. So she reads this list. I worry that what would I do if my mum died? I worry that my friends are only friends with me because they feel sorry for me. What will I do if I never get a boyfriend?
Live a happy and exciting life.
Well, us oldies know that. So there were all these, this list of about, I don't know, say 10 things, and you could have heard a pin drop.
Wow.
I had tears running down my face. So I said to the other three, I said, did you know that she felt like this? And they all said no. And I said, well, if you're her friend, and I'm saying this to all of you, if you're friends with each other and you don't even know how you feel, how are you going to manage life?
Mm.
You need to tell your friends certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they all read their lists out then, and give or take, they were all the same.
Wow.
So it brought back to me, yes, kids are still as lost, young teenagers are still as lost, I'm going to say, as I was when I was sewing these clothes. I walked into this club and there's people wearing my clothes. I even made a wedding dress for a friend, and I was, but nobody said to me, Gaynor, this is a great idea, this is what you do next, or this could be your business, you're really good at this.
Mm.
Nobody even said to me, hey, you're good at this, why don't you go to design school, or you know.
Yeah.
And I have never forgotten, I don't blame anyone, but I've never forgotten that feeling of not being seen and not being heard. And I promised myself when I whenever I could, I would try to work with teenagers in some way, shape or form. And I've done some, I won an award actually for the child, Child Commissioner of Victoria. He ran a program. It was a bit of an experiment, trying to get children who are in foster care, or who are in care, sorry, not foster care, who are in care, back into society. So I mentored a young 16-year-old boy for probably 12 months. Right. Just once a week, I would take him into the environment or whatever. Learned such a lot from that. One being that the system doesn't work.
What do you mean the system doesn't work? As in it just doesn't cater for those outliers, that if you're not a normal, whatever that means, that you're in foster care, you're an orphan, you're, you know.
This particular boy lived in a house with, you know, four or five other children, wards of the state, basically.
Yep.
And within that, there was one, I'm going to call them a house manager. I'm not quite sure what their title was, but like a house manager. And this particular boy was only 16, quite a big person in lots of ways, like a big character, a big presence and a big build. Mm-hmm. And one day I picked him up and I said, I'd already pre-planned this if he said yes. He was quite disheveled. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't very clean. And I said to him one day, I said, do you want to go and get your hair cut? He goes, no, it's okay. And he had very messy, greasy hair. And I said, look, I know a place, it's not fancy. You know, I can take you there and, you know, just get it cut. He goes, okay, yeah, okay. And I'd already phoned this place in South Melbourne Market, I think it was somewhere. And when he had his hair cut, I left him there for, you know, they rang me when they'd finished. I went back and picked him up. I just wandered around, came back. He was a different person.
Mm.
He kept looking at himself in the windows
right. And
mirroring. He was doing this because his hair was clean and it was flowing and it was, and I just thought, wow.
Mm.
So anyway, I said, are you going out tonight? He said, oh, I can't wait to go out tonight. So I said, come on, I'll buy you a new hoodie.
Mm.
And again, we were in the market, so it wasn't a huge expense. I said, come on, choose yourself a hoodie. And the thing was, they know the system as well. But he said to me, who's buying this? And I said, I'm getting it for you. He said, well, you take a receipt and you get that money back. He said, because there's money for me to buy clothes.
Right.
So there was this, it was a totally new, different world to me, big eye opener. And I taught him to cook. We went out for breakfast one day. This is the first time I'd taken him for breakfast one Sunday morning. And we were just ordering a breakfast and the waiter said, how do you want your eggs? And he looked at me and he said, what does that mean?
Mm.
And I said, well, do you want a fried egg or do you want scrambled egg? You know, do you want boiled egg? Do you want a poached egg? He goes, oh, just a fried egg. So we started talking about cooking. Now, this guy, when he turned 17, or officially 18, but it happens at 17, he was going to be kicked out of that house because he was no longer qualified to live there.
Right.
In my book, he needed to learn to cook.
Mm.
This is why I'm saying the system isn't great, because I wasn't given a whole list of these are the types of things these guys need to learn, or these young people need to learn. So if you can do any of these, this would be great.
Right.
So there was no guidance at all.
So Teen Boss, so I guess bring us up to date where you are. What is the mandate for Teen Boss, given really you're delving, I mean, you know, I do some sessional lecturing. We just teach about business. We just teach about entrepreneurship, you know, pitching, some financial stuff and whatever. I don't get involved in their personal lives. All right.
No.
But it sounds like you do.
Well, I did, because in that role, that's what it was. That was to mentor a person, a young person in care. So all of these things have sort of come together. And what Teen Boss is an opportunity for a young person, between the age of 16 and 18, the 15's good too, but we're just sort of trying to keep it year 10 and, year 11 and 12 at the moment in schools, who don't feel like they fit in, who don't know what industry they want to go into. They don't want to go to university. Now, some of them might, that's okay too. It's not just for the people that don't necessarily fit in. And what I thought was, if I could show them the very, very basics of how to take an idea and start to form it into a potential business. And so we literally are starting, it's not a business plan that we're doing in the first phase. It's literally called Explore Your Business Idea.
Right.
So we'll go through the five, they're called the five marketing P's, but to me, without those P's, you don't even have the foundation of a business plan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're selling, which is your product, who you're selling it to, which is your people, what price it is, where it's available distribution-wise, that's place, and then how people are going to know about it, which is promotion.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to explore one of those a week, basically,
right,
a fortnight. And they're going to take their idea, and hopefully by the end of that period, we'll have four sessions of training and discussing each of these things. I've created a made up business called Oh My Dog that makes dog coats.
Mm-hmm.
And we're it's going
big
to
demand for that. Big demand.
Yes. They're going to constantly use that.
Right.
They've got a real life example, albeit pretend, but it's the same example each time.
Yep.
So we're going to use that. And I'm going to show them, and they're going to show each other, because the one thing that I learned from the NEIS program, which I know will happen at Teen Boss, is that I might say to people, why should I buy your product? And they're sitting there feeling extremely like the spotlight's on them, going, I don't really know. They do know. So if you ask the person next to them, why should we buy this person's product? The next person knows
right. All
the answers, all the reasons. And so it's very much about them sharing with each other. And from that sharing, they'll get a realization that people think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the teacher or the trainer, and not just me and my mum and dad, but actually my peers here think it's a great idea.
So how do you measure the success of this program? Is it some sort of an elevation in confidence? Because obviously they may or may not launch the program, but it could be a seminal experience where it really is. So how do you measure the outcome?
Right. So what we're going to have interwoven through that, because that's going to come out on the fifth session, is the fifth session they're going to be asked to do a 10-minute presentation of their idea, taking into account all those five things. And this will be to a small panel of judges,
mm-hmm.
and they will be marked from a scorecard, so it will be equal. Everyone will be looked at in the same way, and we'll end up with a point system that will bring us a first, second, or third, or
in terms of the merit of the business opportunity or the quality of the work they've done, or there
a little bit of both. So they're going to be asked things like that. First of all, we'll introduce themselves and give an overview of their idea.
Right.
Okay. So that's where we're going to see their confidence and whether they believe what they're saying, or whether they're just saying it because someone's told them to write that.
Right.
We're also going to ask them what the solution is that they're delivering. Mm-hmm. You know, so what will the dog coat for the dog?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that actually solving a problem? Well, in the wet it is. You know, so they're going to look at a problem solution situation, talk more about their actual product and whether there's a range, and they've realized that actually I could create six different ones for six different markets.
Yep.
They're going to look at the financial side and get the basic understanding of why they've put that price point on it, how they got to that price point. Now, we're also going to totally steal from Shark Tank and let them ask for something at the end of their presentation. So right. On Shark Tank, people ask for an investor, a financial investor. They can't ask for money at this stage, but they can ask for help. So someone might want help with to build a website. I worked with a young person once who was taking going to the op shop, buying clothes, upcycling them and on selling them. So somebody like her would ask for old clothes.
Yep.
Okay. So at that point, some of those participants may have realized that, gosh, running a business is actually huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really think I'm ready, or I don't want to do it. Others might go, oh my gosh, this is me. This is absolutely what I want to do. So we're then going to give them the option of coming on to phase two, which is a basic business plan template with instruction. So they could arguably just take it and fill it out themselves, but we're also going to match them with their, sorry, keep them with their mentor. One of the things I omitted to say was during the training, each participant will be matched with a mentor. So in between the trainings, the fortnightly trainings, they'll have a session with their business mentor to discuss it more,
mm-hmm.
and have a separate, you know, set of eyes and ears on what they're doing.
Can I ask a question? How do you deal, I bump into this all the time, how do you deal with the issue of there are some fundamental business skills or knowledge that you need to have? That, you know, what a legal entity is, what a, you know, when you might need a non-disclosure agreement, when you, if you are getting investment, what that means, how dilution of capital works. So there are some technical aspects to any business, I'm just not, but certainly startup businesses, you know, where they need to understand it, and they're probably 3 to 5 years away from really being ready to understand that stuff. How do you manage that?
So what we're doing in the fourth and final training session, which is down as promotion, that's when we're also going to introduce the legalities of things. Now, we're going to touch on what an ABN number is.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you've bought the Facebook page name or you've grabbed the Facebook name doesn't mean it's your name.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be talking about registering the name. I'll be talking about, but not encouraging, trademarking.
Mm-hmm.
And I say they're not encouraging because it's a very expensive process, and somebody only needs to change your idea or your whatever it is you've got by 10%,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a different version. So I will let people know what that is, but I'm not encouraging that personally. I did trademark something once,
right.
So I have been through the process. We'll be talking about the social media names. And obviously, before you go and register your business name with the government body, ASIC, go and check that the Facebook name and the Instagram name and any other social media, YouTube or anything else, check it.
All that. So some guidance with that. But it sounds like you're still, you know, you could go through that course, and even if you're the worst person in the most unable to accommodate all the things that you're learning, but you got a lift in your confidence, and that would still be a good outcome for you. If somebody went, you know what, here's a reason for me to actually study, or here's a reason for me, because this appeals to me, but I'm not getting it, and I want to go and learn more now. And do you measure that? Do you?
Well, this is why our first session is definitely a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an idea of what I would like to measure.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to look at those types of things, like the confidence building, like the collaboration potential. I want to see the difference between people who don't automatically, fit into a group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say there's 10 of them. I want to be able to observe myself people's involvement. Now, just if they don't get involved doesn't mean there's anything wrong with them, and it doesn't mean that their business won't work, but I want to be able to look at these things and get feedback from everybody,
mm-hmm.
about those little things. Now, did it help that your peers helped you answer questions, and you know, or would you have rather have done this on your own? So I spoke to one of the participants who's registered yesterday. And he's got a brilliant idea. I just love it. So another thing, oh, sorry, finish this bit first. His only question was, once we'd been through everything, and I wanted to make sure that what he'd read on the website, he really did understand that that's what it was, and he hadn't misread anything. His only question was, how many other people are going to be on the course?
Oh, okay.
And so for some, they don't want a lot.
Yep.
And others, they don't mind a lot because then they can hide. You know, so there's all these variations of what people...
It's face-to-face or it's online?
The training is face-to-face at this point in time, and we're going to be using an independent school in Frankston. They've given us their venue. The mentoring in between the training will be online with their mentors. And then their pitch at the end, if they wish to, they can invite their mentor, they can invite their teacher, they can invite a parent or parents, friends, whatever, if they want to. But one of the things I wanted to, that came about with me talking to this young person yesterday who's registered, his idea is to actually do with hair care, mm-hmm. as in hair products. And what it made me realize was I have a mix of, I've got 10 mentors assigned to Teen Boss for me to match with 10 participants, all from all different backgrounds. My intention is to build a bank of mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also know a hairdresser who runs her own business. Because of this conversation I had with this boy yesterday, not in the first phase when we're teaching, when we're doing the classroom work, but if he wants to take that on to the second phase, I'm actually going to ask this hairdresser if she would be interested in working with him through the business plan. I know she's got a business plan. She's had a business for years. It's very successful. And she knows about hair care. So my intention as we go forward is
industry
to try
experience.
To help people within industry. Exactly. Because not only do I want these people to realize that actually their idea is a good idea, in phase two, they might, let's say, for example, they're printing designs on T-shirts or some sort of clothing. It would be great experience for that young person to go to a market and get first-hand feedback from potential buyers or buyers, customers.
Sure, test the market for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Now, they might not have the opportunity to do that without Teen Boss.
Mm.
Yes, their mom or dad might be able to take them, but it might be, a bit hard.
Yep.
So their mentor and maybe a parent might come along with them as well, or a friend might come along with them, but they would experience a market stall, how you go about booking it, paying for it, setting it up, obviously running it, and get feedback. Do people like the T-shirts? Do they want other designs? Do they think they're the right price point? All those kind of things, which you're not going to get.
Right. So you're... And so you're doing this through schools, or you're just doing directly at the moment?
Right. So the pilot, which is this year's program, which starts at the end of April, has specifically been, we are getting our young people specifically through the schools that are in the two regions near where I live, which is the Mornington Peninsula and the Frankston region. So I presented to a number of schools all in one go. They came to a meeting. Not everybody came, obviously. The people who were there absolutely loved the idea. They took posters back to their schools. The schools who didn't attend, they were emailed the poster along with some information. I am not sticking to schools outside of this pilot.
Yep.
I'm already talking to youth groups. And it's interesting. It's like everything. Once you start talking to somebody, it just gets bigger and wider and wider.
So what are your risks as a business in terms of working with kids' checks and, whatever liabilities, get land on you? You must be thinking about that.
It's pretty huge. Yeah. So what I learned only a couple of weeks ago, the lady who told me this, I did meet her back in November, but it must have slipped her mind to tell me. I needed and now have what they called a child safe environments policy.
Right.
And it is based on the 10 Australian child safe principles, I think they're called. And you have to, I have to, as a business owner offering services to young people, I have to make sure that each of those 10, I not only acknowledge, but I have a process and a procedure for them all. So I now have that in place. Anybody that comes on board, whether it be an employee, a subcontractor, a volunteer, they need to sign a code of conduct, which is a reflection of the child safe environments policy, acknowledging that they've received it, that they've read it, sorry, and understand it. They all have to have a working with children card.
Yep.
I also have given both the mentors, and these will be on display within the training area that we're working in, a list of phone numbers of people who can help.
Mm-hmm.
So the main, I am sort of overseeing the whole thing. So if a mentor and a young person are having an online session and the young person states to the mentor they need help, they don't feel safe in a situation, my mentor is not able to give advice, but they can give them the phone numbers and ask them to call them straight away, or they can call them on their behalf with the young person's permission. But they both have, sorry, their mentor is to come back to me.
Yeah.
And again, I can phone certain agencies and ask for help. So as much as we can be there to support them if they ask for help, we're not allowed to help them.
Yep.
A little bit like being a first aid person. The number one thing in first aid is to call 000.
Yep.
Not a qualified doctor or nurse. You can put them in a position, you know, you can give them some certain help, but you can't do any, you must not help them.
I've got to say, it occurs to me that, you know, one aspect of what you're doing is actually teaching them to move forward into an environment of uncertainty, and where they don't feel safe. At the same time, we're trying to keep them safe. So that's an interesting thing, because the world is not safe. You know, the world is not safe, and you need to build up certain skills to assure yourself of your safety. But I'll leave that one alone. But why don't you? I think that's probably a good spot to leave it. If you could just let listeners know if they're interested in contacting you, either for your business or for your or for Team Boss or both, how are they going? Where do they find you?
Yes, thank you. So my business is called BelieveAustralia.com, and within, underneath that is Team Boss. Now, as soon as we've done the pilot, I will bring that out, and it will be its own entity. Team Boss can be found on teamboss.com.au.
Yep.
And we're not only looking for young people, as I said, between 16 and 18, who've got a business idea. We're interested in mentors from all walks of life. And it is online, so you don't necessarily have to be, close to us. And the other area that we're looking at, if people are interested, is we're looking at building a team of partners to support this. And within that, we're looking for the prizes for the young people. Everybody that takes part is going to get a high value show bag.
Mm-hmm.
And once we've got the pilot under our belt, I'm going to sort of regroup, because I would like this to be able to spread a lot further out, not only out of schools and into youth groups and young people environments, but also regionally, move it away from Frank, not away from, but it, have it in other areas other than Frankston and the Mornington Peninsula area. I will continue to do it here, but it does all depend on how this one goes. What we'll also do at the end of this one is to look at how this can be funded in a sustainable way.
Sure.
And there are pots of money. There is funding in different avenues. There's also corporate sponsorship or corporate social responsibility.
Right.
I'm going to look at whether or not it's worth me setting Team Boss up as a social enterprise. I'm going to a workshop next week to find out more about that.
Yeah, that's a determination that's got to be made. If this helps at all, I'm certainly happy to, with you and your whoever the winner is, happy to have them as part of their prize to get interviewed on the podcast and make them a little bit famous.
Brilliant.
They
love that.
So they can sort of tell us about their experience, so when it happens, so you're welcome to drop that in the show bag.
Thank you very much. That's fantastic.
Fantastic. And so other than the website, so believeaustralia.com and teenbossaustralia.com.au are the two websites. And do you have a...
Just teenboss.com.au, not Australia.
Oh, Teenboss, yeah.
Teenboss.com.au, yes. Yep. Yeah.
And an email address?
Gaynor@believeaustralia.com.
Okay, GAYNOR@believeaustralia.com.
Yes, that's
great.
The best one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gaynor, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you for letting me dig into your personal life a little bit. It's just the way I roll. it just makes for a much more interesting conversation, particularly when, there is no daylight between our personal lives and this sort of work. You know,
exactly.
I can be an accountant and turn up at 9 I'm an accountant and at 5 I'm not. But it's just this world just does not work that way. So thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for the energy that you bring to the sector. I think, it's valuable. And for me, I understand where this fits now. I didn't really at the beginning, but I think I do now. And I see it as very, very valuable, at least as part of the journey. And good luck to you.
Thank you.
And certainly happy to have you back, in a year or so, and just see how you're going.
See how it wins.
Yeah. No worries. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gaynor Lawton. I think most of the time we listen to people who go off and set up traditional type businesses or even tech startups with big audacious visions. I think that the type of work that Gaynor does is very, very important in helping people in different ways navigate their journey. Much of the journey of the entrepreneur is really facing your own demons, I think you'll understand. So thank you for listening. Until next time, this is Entrepreneurship with Christo.